So, again, GSM was a 2G standard. The main function for GSM was providing digital voice connectivity. And now, since GSM started, or since cellular networks started, the world has evolved, and a lot more now centers around data, non-voice information being transmitted. Okay. So the third generation of cellular systems was aimed at dealing with data transmission. Okay. In terms of who says what's 3G, the standardization is regulated by the International Telecommunications Union, which, sort of just as a point of history, was established in 1865, so it's been around a lot longer than cellular networks. And the ITU would be responsible for a much broader range of standards than just 3G. 3G would be one aspect of standardization. The telecommunications standards which have been approved as by the ITU as 3G standards are referred to as IMTS 2000. And they're required to support a number of features. The simultaneous use of speech and data services, higher data rates, up to 14 megabits per second downlink and 5.8 megabits per second uplink, although the exact rates aren't specified. Support global mobility, so worldwide roaming, and to support multimedia and real-time services. So again, the big one is this handling data in a reasonable fashion. The third generation partnership project, 3GPP, is a collaborative partnership to develop 3G systems specifications within the IMTS framework. And I have A emphasized because it's not the only body developing these specifications. It's one that we'll concentrate on as having developed the UMTS standards, again, as an evolutionary step from GSM. Competing with that is 3GPP2, which has developed the competing CDMA 2000 standards, or more common in the U.S. Additionally, there will be mobile WiMAX standards competing as well. So, for the purposes of looking at 3G, what we're going to concentrate on is 3G standards as an evolution from GSM to UMTS. And this is one path that has been taken, not the only path. So there's a number of references to look at. The first one is an overview of GPRS, which again is sort of not 3G, but a step towards 3G, and then an overview of UMTS and WCDMA, so one specific area interface specifically. Okay, so again, our starting point is with GSM, which did not provide any packet handling. Obviously, in the same way you can have a telephone modem, you could transmit data over GSM connections, but they would, but that would just be over those connections, not in any, nothing to do with the network. So a number of steps have sort of, the GSM has evolved to handle packets. The first option was HSCD, high speed circuit switched data services, and this allowed the transmission of data separate from voice, although again still over voice connections, but it was an acknowledgement that sort of different sorts of data existed and should be handled by the network. Okay. GPRS then handled data in a packet switched fashion, and Edge improved on those the data rates available for GPRS, and UMTS, and it should be said that Edge is considered or is certified as a 3G standard, although it tends not to be marketed in that way, and we'll see why later. And finally, UMTS, which is sort of a full-fledged 3G standard, having evolved from GSM. And next lecture, we'll look at 4G systems. So again, LTE, moving on to LTE Advanced, and where those things are going. Okay, so again, if you wanted to transmit data in your classic GSM system, well, you had a connection, you could use essentially a modem and transmit data over that connection, but it was not an overly fast or efficient procedure. CSD was the first attempt to try and handle data transmission, again, as distinct from voice transmission. And essentially, the way it did this was to allow, to assign multiple time slots to a single connection. So again, your voice time slot was sort of sufficient for a voice connection, but didn't give you a very good data rate. So now you were allowed to have up to 8 time slots. It's still circuit switched, so each of those slots is connection oriented and has to be set up, but it does allow you essentially just a bigger pipe. Okay. And so, in theory, that could give you up to 76.8 kilobits per second. In practice, the maximum data rate was a little bit lower than that. So, again, by today's standards, that wouldn't get you too far. Okay. So, all of the assigned channels were essentially linked together, and they followed the same frequency hopping, training sequences, channel coding, interleaving, and rate adaptation. Okay. Each time slot had its own SAC, but common FAC. And the time slots were treated as a single link during handover. Okay. So, essentially what this did was get you from being able to send over one time slot to being able to send over a number of time slots. And this was somewhat problematic in the sense that, particularly during handover, if you had your multiple time slots, that number of time slots had to be available when you handed over as well. So it's not... So you'd increase your probability of blocking. Okay. And so the way the connection was set up was that the mobile station would indicate how many channels it would like and what the minimum it needed was. So it could say, I'd really love all eight, but 4 is sufficient, and then negotiate channel coding, modems, data rates, etc. And the system would then get back to the mobile station with what it could provide and whether that was in the acceptable range or not. Okay. The connections could be symmetric in the sense that you want the same number of time slots uplink and downlink, or asymmetric, you might want a higher number of time slots in a downlink direction. And the price depended on the duration of the connection and the number of time slots. So again, it's still a connection-oriented system and has all the drawbacks that such a system would have for data transmission. Okay. So the next innovation was to handle packets in their own right, sort of handle packets in a sort of packet switched way. And distinguish packet transmission from voice transmission. And so GPRS, General Packet Radio Service, did just this. Okay. And so it gave you data rates from 9.6 to 172 kilobits per second. So still not terribly impressive, but it was doing packet handling. And so the goals of this system were to have an open architecture, to have consistent IP services, so packet handling, the same infrastructure for different air interfaces, to integrate the telephony and internet infrastructure, so allow connection to either telephony or data networks. And sort of again to allow more flexibility. Okay. This was done as an overlay of GSM. So essentially you had your GSM system carrying voice, and we just added sort of additional functionality that would handle packets now. Okay. And in this way, the user did not have to set up voice connection circuits every time they wanted to send data, but the transmission of data was handled through the networks, and the user was charged according to the amount of data sent now, not sort of the number of circuits that had been set up. Okay. And so, again, it's a packet switching approach. Okay. And so how did GSM have to change to do this? Well, the main change was to the to allow not only sort of again the voice connections but packet handling, and you now need it then serving GSN, which would deliver and receive packets from and to the mobile station. So it had to handle packets from the mobile station in the same way that sort of again distinct from voice information. And then you would have a gateway GSN, which now connected not to the telephony network but to external data networks. Okay. So again, these new GSNs were required, and within the base station controller you needed a packet control unit as well. Okay. So the SGSN had a similar role to the MSC, but again for handling packets. And the GSN provided the access into the data networks and performed whatever protocol translations were required. Okay. And the MSC and the SGSN could coordinate to exchange information about the users who were using both voice and data services. So that's your basic GSM architecture, allowing our voice connection and into the public land mobile network. And so additional to that, we now have a separate sort of system coexisting which handles packets. So at the base station subsystem, you have a packet control unit to handle packets as distinct from voice. That routes to the SGSN, which routes to the GGSN and out to the data network. So with a relatively small amount of changes, you could handle data separate from voice. Okay. So again, GSM channels were frequency bands, and so for voice, obviously, you take one of these channels, but for data, the channels can be multiplexed statistically, so you can share them using statistical multiplexing. Okay, and as you might expect, there will be differences in how This works in the downlink and uplink direction. Again, the downlink direction can be controlled by the BSC. And so if packets have to be transmitted, they're just transmitted on a first-come, first-served basis. In the uplink direction, again, if you've got these always-on systems, then you have to have some method of contention or resolving contention in trying to transmit the data. And what's used is reservation aloha. So slotted aloha is used for a reservation request. And then sort of time slots are allocated as needed, and the users can then transmit according to these allocated time slots. Okay. So there is, Aloha is a contention-based system, so there's possibilities of collisions. So your data, your requests don't necessarily get through, but the contention is limited to the phase of making those requests. And once your request gets through, then you're allocated a specific time to transmit your data. Okay, so the channel structure is similar to GSM. The main difference now is, again, that there's sort of parallel channels, or some channels are allocated to controlling the packet transmission as well as voice transmission. And so within the GSM channel structure, additional time slots and frame positioning is dedicated to the control of packet transmission. Okay. And so when transmitting packets, the channels are allocated only for the duration of that transmission, and again, the allocation is controlled to sort of try and optimize the performance of the network. And so now channels can be assigned based on load, priority, or the type of operation, so the importance of the data. So is it control data or just payload? Okay. And the logical channels are defined for these transmission and control functions, and again, they're just mapped onto the physical channels. Okay, so we have the four types of logical channels now. We have packet data traffic channels, and so they're mapped onto physical channels as for the voice. But now four frames creates a block, and it's these blocks that are allocated, and that gives you a certain amount of data that can be transmitted within that block. And 52 blocks constitute a multi-frame, and that's different than the 26 that were used for voice data traffic channels. Okay. And then we have the common control channels. And again, these allow for the requesting of resources, and so the mobile station will ask for a resource along the packet random access channel. That will be granted on the packet access grant channel. And then you have packet paging channels, so like voice paging, you have to find out where to send the packet, and packet notification channels, so again, informing the mobile station about multicast packets. So, again, similar to the common control channels, but handling packet access now. Then you have packet broadcast control channels, and again, this is for system control information, downlink only, and packet dedicated control channels. So handling sort of handling issues with the transmission of specific packets. Okay. And so again, the mobile station will look at the broadcast control channel to connect, and then to look for the common control channels. Okay, so since the allocation of resources is still controlled centrally, so again, a mobile station will request access, and then it'll be granted the channel. It's possible for GPRS to provide quality of service, so to distinguish between different data types and attempt to provide different services for different data types. So, and so GPRS allows traffic to be distinguished along four parameters. Priority, so high, normal, or low. Delay classes, and so here we define classes with different average and 95th percentile delay guarantees. And so this will correspond roughly to different the different classes of traffic as would be defined as sort of in the G1010 specification, for instance. Okay. Then it allows for specification of reliability and a request on throughput. Okay. So again, imagine streaming video versus file transfer. And so you're allowed to request resources that would suit each of those types of data transmission. Okay. And so, again, that is possible because of the centralized control of resources, but that has to be said with the caveat that for GPRS, voice traffic always took precedence over data traffic, so these were if available. Okay. Okay, various coding schemes could be used in GPRS. And these led to different data rates, and also within, but also different levels of error correction available within the system. So CS1 was the strongest coding system, so it led to the lowest data rate, but the highest level of error recovery. Up to CS4, which was only only did the blocking coding, so the parity checks, not any sort of convolution encoding, and so led to a higher data rate, but again, no error recovery possibilities. So depending on what your channel conditions are, one of those coding schemes could be used. And obviously that ought to be CS3, not CS2. Okay, so GPRS can allocate a number of time slots, and it can also use different coding schemes, and depending on the number of time slots or channels granted and the coding scheme used, you would get various data rates, and again, that could be tailored to specific requests for quality of service. And so you could have service negotiation based on sort of a minimum and maximum performance. Okay. And so GPRS is, it can be thought of as the first attempt to offer a genuine packet-switched data transport service, and it was done as an overlay of the GSM networks, with voice traffic still taking precedence, and again, not spectacular data rates by today's standards. So a lot of the work sort of following on from this has been in sort of getting increasing data rates. Edge is enhanced data rates for GSM evolution, and it offers 3G services over existing GSM networks. In the existing GSM spectrum. So again, it's a definite evolution for GSM. Okay. And eGPRS is sort of synonymous, and it's enhanced GPRS. So again, building on GSM through GPRS to eGPRS. Okay, so again, Edge has been certified as a 3G standard in the sense it conforms to the 3G requirements, but it operates in the 2G spectrum, so frequently it's not really considered in that class, and it's at the low end of the data rates that would be considered acceptable. Okay. And so Edge triples the data rates that we could get previous to this. And it does this through sort of more sophisticated coding methods. Okay, and it adapts again to conditions it does rate adaptation and coding adaptation according to the quality of the radio channel. Okay, and so Edge can carry 236 kilobits per second for over four time slots, with a theoretical maximum, again, depending on the coding scheme and the number of time slots allocated, of 473 kilobits per second for 8 time slots. So that would be about 4 gigabits per second if everything worked out wonderfully. Okay, so it does have higher data rates. Okay, and so how does it do this? Well, it uses 8 phase shift, 8 PSK, which means that you have 3 bits per signaling element, and that's used in, and then if that's not required, then GM, then you go back to GM, the Gaussian MSK. Okay. It uses slow frequency hopping, which was optional for GSM and GPRS, to try and sort of optimize the channel characteristics. And the link, the modulation and channel coding schemes are dependent on the link quality. Okay. So it's not a huge change from GPRS. The transmission equipment has to change to suit the new modulation schemes. And okay. So again, the slow frequency hopping fights against channel fading and lowers the co-channel interference. And lowering the co-channel interference can increase the overall system capacity. Okay. And each block is sent on 4 different frequency carriers, so again, you have the resistance to channel effects. As in terms of link quality control, again, you want to choose your coding and your modulation, and the MS informs the base station about the quality of the channel, so it measures it, and then the base station makes a decision about modulation and coding, and so you have either the 8 PSK or the GMSK to be used, and then 9 coding rates now, up from the 4 for GPRS. Okay, and so again, you've got peak data rates. You know, again, if everything's going perfectly, of 4 megabits per second, more realistically, 1 megabit per second or less. It has been certified as a 3G standard, although its operating was considered to be the 2G spectrum. Okay. So finally we arrive at 3G, and as we said before, ITU is the standards body which is responsible for 3G standardization. The collection of the family of standards that have been certified as being 3G compliant are referred to as IMTS 2000. And again, the goal is higher data rates and sort of a good handling of speech and data services together. And 3GPP has the approach, is one body working on 3G standards, and it has proposed the UMTS standards. Okay, and again, there are competing standards, 3GPP2 developed CDMA 2000, which again, builds on the US-based CDMA systems. Okay. And so 3GPP has handled the standardization of 3G networks as a series of releases, and these are all numbered and have come out sort of over the years. Release 98, sort of specified pre-3G networks. Release 99 specified the first UMTS networks and incorporated the CDMA air interface. Release 4 went to an all IP core network. Release 5 introduced a multimedia subsystem and high-speed downlink packet access. Release 6 integrated operation with wireless LAN networks. Release 7 improved quality of service for real-time applications, specifically things like VoIP. Release 8 was actually moving sort of beyond 3G into LTE, which again is a move away from UMTS towards a 4G standard. Release 9, again away is more towards 4G. It specifies the interoperability of WiMAX and LTE and UMTS systems. And release 10 specifies LTE Advanced, which is sort of a genuine 4G system, so we'll deal with it later. Okay, but for now, what we're concentrating on is UMTS systems, and the goal of UMTS systems was to offer 3G services as an evolutionary step from GSM to GPRS. Okay. And the idea was that there was a different spectrum allocation for 3G systems, so they operated in a different part of the spectrum, and so new radio interfaces could be defined to operate sort of within this new spectrum and sort of make use of sort of evolving technology to again get the better data rates that were required. Okay. And UMTS offers classes of service similar to the GPRS services. So you can distinguish quality of service. Okay, so this is becoming historical at this point, but again, spectrum was allocated specifically for 3G networks, and the licenses were, and the handling of that spectrum allocation had a significant impact on the deployment of 3G networks, and in particular in Europe. And specifically, Europe went to this sealed bid auction, and so fairly high prices were paid for the licenses. We won't go into what happened in Ireland, but so there was significant debt attached to the licensing of the 3G networks, and that actually had some impact on the sort of then the operator's ability to actually roll out the networks. It's happening now, but it took a while. Okay. And so subsequent to that, around the world, much lower prices were paid than would have been true in Europe. And some regions adopted other allocation methods, such as Hong Kong. They did a sort of profit-sharing approach. So, yeah, the government got a share of the profits from the 3G networks. Okay, so anyway, 3G again was allocated in these two bands. And exactly how those bands were divvied up is quite regional. Okay, and then so in Europe again, the allocation was primarily for UMTS, and then within that, sort of various technologies were supported in different regions, sort of in different bandwidth regions, spectrum regions. Okay. So, what distinguishes UMTS is essentially the radio access that's used. Okay, and a number of air interfaces, so a number of different technologies have been defined that can be used for the air interfaces. Excuse me. And so, ITU has agreed a family of standards that's capable of delivering the data rates that are compatible with 3G services, and some of these are going to be backward compatible with the pre-existing systems, and others again require this new frequency allocation. So, for instance, Edge is backward compatible, UMTS uses new radio technology. DECT and WiMAX are other standards that also use sort of need the new spectrum. Okay. Now the standards tend to be distinguished according to their channel access methods, so according to this air interface, but obviously they have to handle everything. There's sort of full networking standards, so they have to handle all the back end as well. Okay. So within UMTS, there's still a number of air interfaces. The most popular would be WCDMA, which uses direct sequence spread spectrum. TD-CDMA or TD-SCDMA would use time division multiplexing as well as spread spectrum. And then again, around the world, other standards apply as well. So you have CDMA 2000, Edge, DECT, Mobile, WiMAX, etc. Okay, and we'll deal more with WiMAX again when we talk about 4G standards. Okay, so the UMTS specification deals with three main components: the core network, the air interface, or I should say the radio access network, and then the user equipment. And so the core network has both circuit switched and packet switched elements. And this is designed to coexist with GSM and GPRS. Okay. And so it has all of the components that you would get with GSM and GPRS, the home location register, the MSC, the SGSN, the GGSN, Additionally, it has a media gateway, so it has dedicated handling of multimedia traffic. So then, there is the radio access network, so UMTS Radio Access Network, or UTRAN, and that's essentially equivalent to the BSS, so handling the radio connectivity for these systems. And so you have the radio network controller, which is like the BSC, which manages the resources and controls and manages mobility. And then you have node Bs, which are equivalent to the BTSs, the base station transceivers. And so they handle the actual connection with the mobile units. And then you have, the air interfaces, which define how that connection occurs. Then you have the user equipment, and again, you have UMTS subscriber identity modules, so the same sort of information that you would need for a GSM system, but again for now the UMTS system. And intelligent services are catered for as well, so the call forwarding, etc. Okay. So it's actually not that different from what we've seen before. We have at the one end our base stations and our cells, and these are controlled again through the RNC, and those connect back into the core network now, which has the MSC, the SGSN, and now the media gateway. Okay, so before we would have had the MSC and the SGSN, we now have this media gateway as well. And again, that's just distinguishing the type of traffic you're handling, sort of basic packets, media packets, or voice. And also, again, the CBC handling the services. But it's a similar setup to before, believe it or not. Okay. And again, we have a number of interfaces defining how the different components of the system interact. And again, the main interfaces are the UU interface, so between the user equipment and the UTRAN. And IUB interface, which is between the node Bs, so between the base stations and the base station controller, essentially, and the IU interface between the UTRAN and the core network. So much the same, again, as before. Okay. And as before, we have our protocol layers. We have a physical layer, a data link layer, and our radio network layer, controlling the radio resources. the primary distinction now is that the data link layer provides not just radio link control, but also medium access control. So again, it's going to allow packets to be multiplexed onto channels. Okay, so that's the layering structure. And again, note that we've got a control plane here, which is handling our mobility management, our connection control, our service management. So again, sort of the things that networks, that telephone networks like to do. And then we have the user data plane as well, where the user can transmit the data. Okay. So we still have sort of some things associated with connectivity as you would need for a mobile system, but then you also have the sort of packet switch data networks functionality as well. Okay. Now, for UMTS, three types of channels are defined. So we used to have our logical channels mapping onto our physical channels. We now have in between that transport channels. And the difference here is, again, that we're now multiplexing potentially multiple signals onto the same physical channel. So this distinguishes how that's done. Okay. So the logical channels, again, do the same thing. Well, I say similar to GSM, but add packet control. So like EDGE or GPRS, it controls all it provides the control you need for voice and data transport. And then we have the transport channels, which then interface between the MAC and layer one. And so again, the data in the logical channels can be multiplexed onto a single transport channel. And then finally, that's mapped down onto physical channels. Okay. And it gets rather complicated. I've posted just this one sheet which defines all the acronyms, what all these channels mean. But again, here we see exactly where they're active. So we have our radio link control defines our basic sorts of control and data channels. But these then are multiplexed into transport channels. So you see that multiple logical channels get mapped onto a specific transport channel. And then the transport channels are mapped onto the physical channels. And again, the reason for that is that the MAC layer multiplexes sort of different logical channel data onto the same transport channel data, and that then can be distinguished through the header information that's attached by the MAC layer. Okay. Okay, so what do all of these layers do? Well, pretty much what you would expect. So we'll say a few words, working our way up from the physical layer. And obviously the physical layer is offering information transfer services to the MAC layer. So again, it's just providing the actual physical point-to-point connection. And so it's involved in handover, sort of in determining when to hand over, error detection and reporting to higher layers of error detection, the multiplexing of channels, power control, the frequency and time synchronization, etc. So actually just setting up that physical connection. The MAC layer offers data transfer to the radio link control and higher layers. And so it has a number of functions. It selects the appropriate bit rate per information unit delivered to the physical layer. It multiplexes various services onto the transport channel. It can determine priority handling between data flows. And again, just schedule the channel access and provides access control, address control, and contention resolution. So it allows you to, again, request your resources and then be granted your resources. The radio link control layer establishes, again, your point-to-point connection and provides a transparent data service in the sense that it doesn't add any protocol overhead to the information received from a higher layer and can provide either assured or unassured data transfer. Okay, and so what you would do is the functions it performs are segmentation and assembly, transfer of user data, error correction by means of retransmission, sequence integrity, duplicate detection, flow control, and ciphering. The radio resource control sort of then is going to sort of offer higher level channel management. And so it provides general control services. Notification services used for paging and finding specific user equipment. Dedicated control services used for the establishment and release of connections and the transfer of messages using the connection. So again, it's all that sort of control information that we've gone over a number of times already. So broadcast information, resource handling, resource allocation, giving you quality of service control, and then sort of management of link quality. Okay, so again, it's not terribly different from what we saw for Edge. The main thing to do is, again, to sort of realize the sort of centrality of packet handling, and again the ability now to multiplex multiple, you don't have multiple information onto the same channel, the same physical channel. Okay. So that's sort of generically how UMTS is set up. Now, WCDMA refers to a specific air interface. Again, using CDMA spread spectrum techniques for data transmission. Okay, and I mention it briefly here, just because it is the most popular form of UMTS. Okay, and so again, it's distinguished by its air interface, which is a CDMA-based air interface, and the primary features are 5 megahertz wide radio channels, data rates of 2048 kilobits per second, sort of in short term, and slightly lower if you're sort of not as close to a base station, okay, or if you're experiencing it or during an urban setting where you might experience congestion. It uses code division multiple access with a chip rate of 3.84 megachips per second, and 2 modes of duplexing: frequency division duplexing, which is what's usually used, and so you're assigned one frequency for your uplink and one frequency for your downlink. And then time division duplexing is also possible, where you would have different time slots for uplink and downlink. Okay. So the benefits of using CDMA are improved spectral efficiency, and when combined with QPSK, you can achieve 3 to 4 times improved spectral efficiency. Adjacent cells do now use the same channel frequencies, and this leads to improved capacity and possibly improved handover efficiency. And spread spectrum also allows for certain benefits in terms of security. Now, having said that, the 4G systems are tending to move away from a CDMA-based system. But okay. So, as we said, basically the symbol rate, the chipping rate is 3.84 megachips per second, and this can be combined with QPSK to give a maximum data rate of 7.68 megabits per second. But that's included with the chipping rate. So typically, the data being transmitted is at a lower rate, but with a spreading factor, If you want to increase your data rates, you can decrease the spreading factor. Okay. Spreading is used to distinguish channels and then to distinguish individual connections between base station and user equipment, and that can get quite complicated exactly how that occurs, but the thing to note is that it requires complete synchronization of the system. Okay. Okay. And so synchronization, there are two synchronization channels. The primary synchronization channel is the same in all cells. And it allows the user equipment to synchronize with the base station in each time slot. And then there are also secondary synchronization codes, which are, again, used within a cell for synchronization purposes. Okay. Now, again, since this is a CDMA system, as we noted before, power control is important, and so we want, again, the transmissions to arrive at the base station at roughly equal power levels. Okay. Yeah. Both open and closed loop power control is applied. The open loop is used during the initial access before there's a one-to-one link between the user equipment and the base station. And but since the transmitted and the received frequencies are not going to be the same, it's doesn't give you a real good estimation of the path loss. Because, you know, as you recall, fading is sort of frequency specific. So, but it's the best you can do. Once there is a connection between the user equipment and the base station, then closed loop control is used. So a measure of signal strength is taken in each slot in both uplink and downlink direction. And based on that measurement, a bit is set that requests the power level to either move up or down by one. Okay. And this means that the power level is always changing. But again, the assumption is that it's not going to change a lot over any given period. Okay. So, just to have a look at sort of the operations that would happen when a mobile station powers on, it needs to sort of attach itself to a cell. So it looks for the closest base station to itself. Okay. In order to do that sort of simply and efficiently, it performs three steps. The first is to search for the primary synchronization channel. And then the mobile station can choose the cell with the strongest signal. Okay. After it's acquired frame synchronization, then it finds a code group in the secondary synchronization channel. And it can associate itself with a code group. And then finally it finds the scrambling codes, so it it correlates its signal with a specific scrambling code. And so once it's done that, it's linked to a specific primary control channel and can communicate with the network via that. Okay. So once it's in the network, the mobile station is allocated a paging group, and then that can be used over the common control channel to indicate that it's there are messages for it. Okay, so that's connecting to the network. Again, handovers are important. And so these are classified as intra-mode handovers, which means that that's basically just as you move through the system, as long as the system is operating in the same manner, then you're just doing your basic handovers, and those can be softer or hard, again, depending on how you move from cell to cell. Intermode handovers means that you're changing from time division duplexing to frequency division duplexing, so you're changing sort of significantly the mode of operation. And then you have inter-system handovers between sort of other systems such as GSM. Okay. And so finally, we'll look at connection. So again, we start by either receiving a paging message or requesting a connection. And so that has to go to the RRC connection request to establish the parameters of the connection and then set up that connection. And then once the connection is set up, then you will again have your data links set up. So the three phases of connection establishment are radio connection establishment, so getting the physical link, then moving back from the mobile station to the core network, so from radio to your MSC or SGSN, and then finally back through the core network to the opposite party. Okay, and so again, the RRC will communicate over first the common control channels and then the dedicated control channels, and that will give you your radio link. Then you have to, and so that's the green, then you have to again verify your right to be within the network, and again that's done at through the MSC, and so that's in pink. And finally, the setting up of a point-to-point, sort of a dedicated channel is in the light green. Okay. And so that's sort of setting up a voice connection. The other option is data connection, or well, that's setting up a connection. Then when there's three different modes of transporting data within WCDMA, if a common channel can be used for short or infrequent packets, but it's the handover is not easy. A dedicated channel can be established for more larger or more frequent packets, and so this allows for better handover and power control. So you're setting up the dedicated channel, but there is the connection setup time. So there's an overhead for doing that. And finally, data can be transmitted on shared channels, so sort of a statistical multiplexing. And so you get some of the benefits of a dedicated channel, but not in terms of handover. Okay, so to wrap up, UMTS is a 3G standard, and it's an evolution of our initial GSM through edge to UMTS. It operates in a different spectrum to GSM, but will use many of the same core network elements and can coexist with GSM networks. Okay, and the packet handling is sort of, and data rates are core to UMTS. So, next time we will have a little look at 4G standards and what are the key features of 4G in terms of what is desired. What's desired is even higher data rates. Handover across heterogeneous networks, so you can hand over from one network to another in a smooth way, global roaming, and high quality of service. Okay. And so, again, there's probably a bigger jump between 3G and 4G standards, and we'll take a look at what's being done along those lines next week. Okay, so that's it. I will see you.